Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and it is Friday, and we are doing a decade in review for you today. In fact, two, but the first is politics.
We're thinking of having a Chicago Tea Party in July.
The radical left has got control of the process.
There's a Tea Party tidal wave.
I thank the people of Massachusetts for electing me as your next United States Senator. This is the people's seat.
I'm not recommending for every future president that they take a shellacking like I did last night.
10 months ago in Paris, I said before the world that we needed a strong global agreement to reduce carbon pollution and to set the world on a low carbon course. The result was the Paris Agreement.
Black lives matter! Black lives matter! Black lives matter!
The African American community is not just making this up. And it's not just something being politicized. It's real. And there's a history behind it. And we have to take it seriously.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am officially running for President of the United States, and we are going to make our country great again.
The American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Me too.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
The yeas are 230. The nays are 197. Present is one. Article 1 is adopted.
I'm exhausted just listening to that, and it barely scratches the surface of politics in the last decade. But we've got some help to help us make sense of it. So joining me here in Studio 3 is Boston Globe political reporter James Pindle. James, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Also on the line with us from Washington is WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins. Welcome back, Kimberly.
Hi, Tiziana.
And we have you. Join us. What were your biggest political moments of the last 10 years? Have your politics changed? How? And for better or for worse since 2010? Call us. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. All right, James and Kimberly, I'm going to ask you the same first question that I've asked on the other decades in review we've done over the last couple of weeks. James, I'll start with you. If there were a through line, if you were going to pick a through line or a thematic line for the last decade in U.S. politics, what would it be?
It was dark.
All right.
It's probably the darkest decade we've had in politics since the 1960s. If you think about it, you know, people who just became early adults this past decade, say they're 20 to they're 25, this is all they've known. This was a decade of controversy, of gridlock, of outrage, and of the politics of resentment. And what was interesting about the montage you had, I think it's fitting. We began the decade with the rise of the Tea Party. We ended it with an impeachment of a president. We didn't talk necessarily about the things we wanted to do together as a country. We talked constantly about things that we were opposing the other side on, whether it was Merrick Garland in the Supreme Court. This is the decade of Trayvon Martin and Black Lives Matter. I think you heard the president talk about that. Massive, massive shootings. Nothing happened with that. Climate change. No real movement since we got out of the Paris Accord agreement. Government shutdowns throughout the entire process. And every single time a politician had a choice, they always picked the more populist and the more base-driven politics because that was the part of the incentives in the system. Now, locally, and then we can move on, but locally, it was a period in New England and particularly in Massachusetts of transition, particularly generational change. I mean, the Scott Brown election clearly was a very, very big moment.
The first time
a Republican had been elected to the Senate since 1972 from this state. Clearly, his re-election led to the rise of Elizabeth Warren, who's obviously been one of the biggest stars. And then now we've seen this entire culture where you don't challenge the old guard. You wait your turn in Massachusetts politics. You play the long game. Also, the script has been totally flipped, where now every single member of Congress faces a primary. Except for Ayanna Pressley. Except for Ayanna Pressley, which is amazing. And then obviously we have a Senate primary the same way. So it's a period of transition for locally, but nationwide it's been very dark.
I want to get Kimberly in on this, especially Kimberly. Would you paint the same picture?
Yeah, I think what I would have said, partisanship has been the through line. And in all of the clips that you played and in all of the, not just the political fights, but the societal fights that we've talked about, things like Black Lives Matter, climate change, they've all been fought in an arena that included partisanship. You can tell which side, for the most part, that people were on based on the political party or the political ideology that they subscribed to. Things that used to be bipartisan, things that used to form consensus, down, you know, things like Supreme Court justice picks, you know, the some of the most ideologically different Supreme Court justices in recent history, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia, were confirmed by unanimous or near unanimous votes. That will never happen again. In fact,
Do you really believe that, Kimberly?
I do.
It will never
I do.
Happen again?
Not in at least a generation. Not unless things fundamentally change here in Washington in a way that I can't foresee it happening at all. And so now you have these partisan fights over everything, gun control, despite the fact that we have seen so much gun violence in the last decade, an unspeakable amount, that is caught up in partisan gridlock. Black Lives Matter, the women's movement, climate change, everything that you can think of is really sends people to their corners, right down to this impeachment. If you recall, with Nixon, the reason he resigned is because Republicans went to him, Republicans in the Senate went to him after the tapes were revealed and said, look, you don't have enough support within your own party. This is over. Could you imagine that happening now? The Republicans have been so solidly behind President Trump, regardless what the facts show. So I think that's been the through line so far.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation and do. These are stark pictures that James and Kimberly have painted. Is it the picture you would paint? What's the through line that you see in the decade in politics over the last 10 years? Give us a call here at Radio Boston. There are so many themes that the two of you hit in those opening threads. One of them that you didn't, that I thought was an interesting bracketing, was healthcare. I mean, as we went into the decade, we saw the Affordable Care Act had been passed. And then we heard President Obama talk about his shellacking in the midterm elections after that. Part of the reason that we had a shellacking of the Republicans in the 2018 midterm elections was an attempt to roll it back. But now we've got a lot of people watching Democrats who may want to vote Democrat saying, you go too far on Medicare for all, we're going to have a problem there, too. So how does it... Is healthcare a bug or a feature of the last 10 years, James?
That's a great question. You know, what's fascinating about it, you're right on the bookends. But what has been true throughout is that any time a party tries to even do something with healthcare, either offer a new program like the Affordable Care Act or take it away, that is the party that gets shellacked. The status quo is the one who always wins when it comes to healthcare. But you're right. This is the decade where healthcare remains today to be the number one issue when you ask in polling what voters care about. The beginning of the decade was largely about the economy and healthcare coming out, of course, the Great Recession. But it has been that has been a through line in American politics as long in this decade, as well as immigration, which has almost been much more of a social issue than it has been any other thing.
So, Kimberly, you've been covering Washington for a while. I want to play a little bit of sound. This is during the GOP repeal and replace effort. July 2017, people are waiting on the floor to see what John McCain's going to do. Mitch McConnell's looking on with his arms crossed. And here's McCain giving the thumbs down.
Mr. Peters.
You know, it strikes me as I was thinking about this decade, Kimberly, that John McCain is an interesting figure who also has his own kind of through line. His voice is not one I feel like we hear someone else picking up today. Is his kind of presence missed, appropriately missed, needed?
Yeah, I mean, look, his absence is definitely palpable on the Senate side in Capitol Hill. But at the same time, look, John McCain was someone, if you recall, way, way back to the presidential election, the campaign election of 2008 and after that. John McCain was a vocal opponent of Barack Obama. You know, there was plenty of partisanship that was happening there. But the difference was it wasn't at all costs. You remember, recall during that campaign when John McCain shut down a supporter who wanted to question the patriotism and Americanness of Barack Obama. There were some lines that he would not cross in a way that now it feels like there is no line that can't be crossed in the interest of partisanship. And certainly John McCain was somebody who was willing to stand up with his words, but also his votes, as is in that case with the effort to repeal Obamacare, stand up to Donald Trump in a way that few Republicans do now. So in that sense, yes, that is definitely something that increases to that exists to a much less lesser extent. We'll see during this impeachment hearing if there are Republicans willing to buck their party, but it seems that that's unlikely.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you want to join the conversation. Galen, pull up a seat at the table. You're calling from Cambridge. What's on your mind?
Thanks so much for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. And thanks for your great program all year. So I'm 26, and the past decade has been the one that I consider the time when I really came of political age, if you will. In 2010, I was I was in my junior year of high school and wasn't really paying attention to the news. Took most things for granted. My parents had a paper on the table every morning, and if I flipped to a page, it was most often like the sports section or something. And around 2014, I was in southern New Hampshire, and I remember seeing a Scott Brown campaign bus for some odd reason, maybe supporting the local Republican person running against, I think it was Gene Shaheen at the time. And I started to pay a little bit more attention, but was still really pretty dialed out. And then 2015, 2016, the current president announced his election, I again took it for granted, perhaps like a lot of pundits. And then he was elected. And I decided I was going to major in history, American history. I wanted to see how much things had changed, whereas previously in high school I took little interest in history. I started to read the paper every day, and I still do, and not because I want to.
And is there one big issue now, Galen, as you've had that awakening? Is there one big issue that weighs most heavily on you?
Yes.
Which is
my great-grandparents came from Europe. It's immigration.
There we go.
And my senior year of high school or college, a kid who I was in school with for all my years there, he said to me, like, I don't know what I'm going to do after graduation. I'm undocumented.
Let's take it from there, Galen. I appreciate you introducing immigration into this conversation. It is important. And I want to pick up on Galen's timeline. This sound you're going to think is from later than it is. This is Donald J. Trump.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
Now, the Muslim ban actually was put in place for the first time in January of 2017, but that's December 25th. James, you knew. So
yeah.
Pick up from there.
No, I mean, I remember the moment I was leaving work, and it was even the newsroom at the Globe when the email came out. It was, I can't remember, it was the first week of December of early 2015. Again, I think you're smart for picking up on healthcare. Now that I think about it more, I'm going to come back to this point, which is healthcare kind of gave us our biggest moments in politics, defined elections, defined, you know, a lot of the decade. The other through thread when you're talking about John McCain, and it's going to get to this immigration point, which is the other thing we saw in this decade was a total collapse of the Christian right and the Republican Party. I am, as a person who covers politics, endlessly fascinated with what happens with the Republican Party after Donald Trump. Right now, it doesn't have an identity. It is the Trump Party, and is driven entirely about him. And moments like that really captured this politics of grievance and how important immigration was going to play, particularly in a Republican a primary base. That seemed to be a shocking moment of a lot of shocking moments. Remember, that was a moment when he came out with that night. every single Republican running against him when there were 17 others running, were all opposing. Every single Democrat were all opposing. People calling it un-American. This is Republicans. And now it is really it's a party which is driven entirely about one person and not necessarily about particular ideology. And I think that was a particular moment when you begin to see this moving. Remember, this is Trump is winning in the polls at this point, and we see him possibly winning Iowa and New Hampshire. He doesn't do that. He wins just New Hampshire. But this is a very serious moment.
Kimberly, should people have understood? You know, we've heard so many times over the years the difference between people who take Donald Trump literally but not seriously and those who take him seriously but not literally. What was that moment?
That moment was one of many that shows that all along Americans should have taken Donald Trump both seriously and literally, because this is something that he carried out. This was still when he was calling for this. This was still during a period of time that folks like James and me were being told by Republicans that, you know, this is campaign rhetoric. You know, if he gets into office, then the seriousness of the office will take hold and he will modify. There has been no modification. He tried and the courts kept sending him back. He tried and succeeded in imposing a ban, not as sweeping as the one he wanted, because there are limits imposed by the Constitution. But he did instill the ban. He's trying as hard as he can to build the wall. He is trying to act on every bit of fear-oriented immigration policy that he campaigned on and that his core supporters want. And this is just one of many areas. There are few things that Donald Trump campaigned on that he has not at least tried with all his might to make policy in office.
All right. Our lines are filling up and our time is getting short. So I'm going to try to grab two quick calls here. First, we've got Sherry in Fitchburg. Sherry, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I can't help but have to call, and I feel compelled to share what to me and a lot of women is the biggest issue that we have right now. And that is that this entire presidency, both in the candidacy stage, post-election, Brett Kavanaugh, you have millions and millions of women like myself across the country who have been triggered, had to go back into therapy and seek professional help just to get through day to day. And it leaves us all with a feeling like we are completely helpless. So we get out, we march, but still nothing changes.
Sherry, when you talk about triggering, you mean triggered about sexual assault, violence towards women, those kinds of things? I just want to make sure I'm understanding you.
Sexual assault in particular, yes.
Okay. I'm sorry you're having that experience, too. Sherry, I want to get Debbie's call in as well, and then I want to give our panel a chance to answer. You raise a very important point and a sense of solidarity with other women who are having a similar experience. Debbie from Revere, let's get you on the line, too. Go ahead.
Hi. I just feel like I hear less and less about our country being founded on the separation of church and state, and there's just been this warping of freedom of religion being used as a weapon against other people. And I don't hear anybody talking about separation of church and state anymore. And that really bothers me.
I appreciate you raising that, Debbie. And, you know, James, you did make mention of sort of the change of the role of the religious right over the last 10 years. I do want to do these in sequence. I want to make sure that we respect what Sherry had to say. Kimberly, comments on Sherry's point first, and then James, I'll come to you about Debbie.
Yeah, I mean, recall right after Donald Trump was inaugurated, the biggest protests in Washington, D.C. and around the world took place. The Women's March that was talking about these very issues. It was after the Access Hollywood comments the president made. Of course, Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation brought that to the fore. We did see a record number of women elected to Congress and to offices, state and local offices around the country. So there has been a political reaction to this. There's also been lots of legislation passed aimed at addressing sexual harassment and violence against women. They are sitting in the House. They will not likely get action in the Senate anytime soon. So there has been some action, despite the flurry of news that keeps it from coming to the fore in that way. And, you know, the same thing with we've seen an increase in attempts by this administration to make it harder, easier for people to discriminate against folks on the basis of religion. So that is also an issue. It's hard for all of them to break
through
the headlines.
I do think
every day.
The administration would frame it as allowing people freedom of religious conscience. And the reason I bring that up is because we're about to go to the church and state question with James. So, James, let me throw to you there.
Well, first, I mean, I have a note here on my phone for my notes for the show. This is clearly also the decade of the Me Too movement. Obviously, underlying a lot of this conversation, which is different than where I'm about to head here, which is while there's been a decline on the Christian right in terms of a political force. Obviously, the gay marriage happened this decade in terms of a Supreme Court hearing. The one of the other big through lines has been the real collapse of pro-choice abortion movement. The idea that Kavanaugh is on the court and now giving that fifth vote whenever that wants to happen to overturn Roe v. Wade has been a very big moment. And this is something that's happened through every single Supreme Court pick this past decade. You can see that happening and playing out. I'd say overall, in terms of separation between church and state, it's a great point. Where it is not getting enough conversation, obviously, when it comes to things like the Muslim ban. But where I think it's interesting is that how the relationship between the Christian right and Donald Trump, particularly leaders of that Christian right, is one of the most fascinating relationships we've seen. Clearly, he is not holding up the values that they have argued so long that they claim that they wanted. But he's a very, very important part of his coalition.
And really specifically the white evangelical
Absolutely.
Vote in this case. Yeah. All right. With the last 30 seconds or so, Kimberly, I'll come to you first. What's next? What's the next big theme that you think is coming?
I think it depends a lot on the outcome of the 2020 election, of course, and also the outcome, what happens in the end of this impeachment. If Donald Trump is reelected, he becomes the first president to be reelected after being impeached. And I think we will see him completely untethered in terms of what could happen. So I think that would dramatically change the political landscape.
And James?
One thing we aren't talking about enough this decade is we are in the middle of a political transformation in the country. It happens every 40 years, and we are in the middle of one right now. I talk about the collapse of the Republican Party. The Democrats have collapsed as well. They just had a Democratic president through much of this last decade, and they're now reckoning with it. We entered the decade with two political parties. Now we have four. There's left, right, and up and down. And how that plays out in the next decade, I think, is going to be absolutely fascinating.
Boston Globe political reporter James Pindle, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kimberly Atkins, WBUR senior news correspondent, thanks.
Thank you.
Stay with us. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.